This is Ask the Chief on WTOP Radio, and your chance to speak with Chief Kathy Lanier is now. If you call us at 877-336-1035, that's 877-336-1035. You can email your question to WTOP.com by going through our website. You can also submit questions on our Facebook page or via Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheChief. Welcome back. Good to see you again.
Nice to see you, too.
Let's start with a story that's in the news this morning about a very famous or infamous case from our area, the Chandra Levy case. For those who may not know, this local murder case certainly drew a lot of attention. It went unsolved for years and then became something of a soap opera due to the fact that Levy, who was an intern at 24 years of age, who had a romantic involvement with a California congressman, and the fact that her remains were unfound for years. Then in 2010, Ingmar Guandique was convicted of murdering Levy. He is now serving a 60-year prison sentence. The new developments are that a local judge has been holding hearings related to this case, and we're learning that the judge has ruled that documents related to those hearings will be sealed. Several news organizations, Chief, have been trying to get a look at them and find out what's been going on. Do you know why these hearings have been shrouded in secrecy?
And you're hoping that I'm going to crack the code here.
Mm-hmm.
No, obviously there's reasons for the judge's order, and I certainly am not going to violate it and discuss it. But I think the judge has made a decision for a reason, and eventually all that will come out. And so the public will have to be patient, I guess.
But by all accounts, this case is closed as far as you're concerned, right?
Yes, it is.
You have a conviction. He is serving time. Then, and the Levy family indicates that they have no idea what's going on. As far as they're concerned, it's closed. You can't give us any indication of
I mean, honestly, I have very little information. I don't know much about it either. It is right now being handled in the courts, and mm-hmm. we just have to respect the judge's order.
The judge had mentioned previously, he cited safety issues as the reason he was keeping this quiet. What safety issues?
I have no idea. I really don't. I mean, like I said, I know very, very little about it. Not much more than what the public knows at this point. And I just, 23 years in the criminal justice system, I respect a judge's order.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, with the conviction, there was no DNA evidence that tied Guandique to this case, correct?
Correct.
Now, and it was a jailhouse informant who indicated that he confessed. Is there any reason to believe that we now need to reopen this for further investigation?
I don't have anything to think that what's going on now would suggest that it be reopened. But again, I'm working on just the same information you guys are working on.
Is there is the defense pressing this in any way?
I really don't have any information. The only thing I can tell you is I know what everybody else knows. And, you know, we just have to wait for the judge to make a decision as to what information will be released. If he's withholding information because of the safety concerns, I think that would be pretty significant. We ought to try and respect it.
All right. We have a lot more. We're just getting started this morning on Ask the Chief. A lot more to discuss, including some budget issues and quite an important issue that has had the chief in the news quite a bit, involving sexual assault cases in the district. We'll talk more about that and get to your phone calls. Ask the Chief this morning, 877-336-1035. The phone number to call to speak to Chief Lanier is 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can email us by going to our website, WTOP.com. We're also taking questions on our Facebook page, or you can send one in, send a tweet, use the hashtag AskTheChief. As always, we're happy to have you back with us every month on WTOP. We want to talk about an issue that has been in the news a lot. We've seen a lot of comments from you in the press regarding sexual assault cases in the district, and a report that was issued by Human Rights Watch. They claim that nearly a third of sexual assault cases during a three-year period, they allege, were brushed aside without proper investigation or without proper filing by your officers. They, in order to come to this conclusion, they attempted to match hospital records with police reports. And they found in some cases the reports missing or incomplete. They also had spoken with some victims who say they weren't treated fairly or treated correctly by officers when they made their reports, their allegations. You have said you find this report fundamentally flawed. Can you explain to us why you felt that way? Now that you've seen the full report, do you still feel that way? And where are we now?
Well, obviously, in all the letters between Human Rights Watch and myself since June of last year. I published them all on my website just so that everybody was kept informed as to how this thing came about. And in all of those letters, I warned that I believed that the methods they were using was flawed, and if we could get more information, we'd be able to reply better. And just what you said, well, first of all, I have an obligation now to correct the record. And I think it's really important that I do. I've had the 197-page report now for about 10 days, and we're about three quarters of the way through pulling information for me to go out and correct the record. So the methodology that you mentioned of taking hospital cases, and then what they did was they actually had a redacted list. The redacted documents they are working with is part of the problem, mm-hmm. which means a lot of information has been blacked out. So they have...
including the victim's name.
Right. These are very, and that's kind of the problem with a private organization doing this type of investigation. Sexual assault investigations are extremely sensitive, and a lot of the information is redacted. So they have a list of between 2008 and 2011 of people who reported to the Washington Hospital Center for sexual assault examinations. That list consists of nothing other than a date. And what they did was they looked for any police report in the Metropolitan Police Department that was written within a 24-hour period of the date on that redacted list. And the problem with that is, and what we found so far is, I'll give you an example. We found at least 18 cases that matched that date that were police reports taken by other jurisdictions. So they wouldn't have been found in our records. That doesn't mean we didn't document 18 cases. That means that those cases were documented by another agency.
Mm-hmm.
It's not unusual for a victim to report to the Washington Hospital Center that has been assaulted in another jurisdiction. In that case, that jurisdiction would come and take the police report. We also found 20 cases where a victim asked for no police involvement. That's a victim's right to ask that not have the police involved, and they have up to 90 days then to later report. So if those victims later reported, they wouldn't have missed those cases as well. And then in seven of the cases on the dates they have documented, we've gone back to the Washington Hospital Center, and there's no record of in their records of an assault exam being done on those days. So, you know, a lot of what we're finding right now, I can tell you 100% positive that there is not 170 cases over that four-year period that were not documented. I'm positive of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the damage to our organization by that false allegation based on just bad data, it's irreparable. I mean, I can't fix that. I can't fix the damage that's been done, but I have an obligation to correct the report.
So certainly the number is in question. How many have you found of the 170 that they say were missing?
So that's kind of misleading when you say how many of you found that were missing. We have found right now 150 instances of the 171 that there is some other explanation. Either there is a report by MPD, or there is a report by another jurisdiction, or there is a request that there be no police involvement. So there's a lot of different scenarios that can account for that 157 that we found so far. And there are some that were included in the FOIA that were missed. You know, we sent the reports, and for some reason they weren't counted in the Human Rights Watch report. So we'll release all of our findings as soon as we complete our review. But again, I just feel like I have an obligation to correct the record.
Were there instances, and you know, we shouldn't spend our time talking so much about the numbers as about some of the anecdotes that came along with that report. Did you find that there were instances where, as some victims claim, that officers did not take them seriously or berated them for making the complaint or did not believe the allegation that was being made?
Absolutely. No question. And you know, I said all along, and I think my reputation has been pretty clear, you know, we're always going to have members of our police department that either don't follow policy or don't do sufficient follow-up or investigation. What the report leaves out is how we responded to that. If we had a detective who didn't handle a case properly, that was addressed. Several detectives have been moved from that unit. That's not a unit that everybody can do well in. It's a very tough investigative assignment. And we train them, we put them in there. We try and make sure that, you know, we have the right people, but sometimes they're not. And I guess the important thing to remember is in this entire report, they're looking at, we have about 500 cases that come into the police department, allegations that come in annually, somewhere between 300 and 500. So over a four-year period, that's 1,500 to 2,000 people we contact in terms of sexual assault investigations. Their report includes between 11 and 15 victims. And in every case that there is information about victims, we're following up to make sure that we've gone back and pulled those investigations, made sure a proper investigation was done. In terms of sensitivity, you know, between 2008 and 2010, we did extensive training on victim-centered interviews, drug-facilitated sexual assaults. And so I think we've seen continued improvement in terms of the way we interview victims. But again, I'm not going to say that there's never been, you know, a detective who was insensitive in interviewing a victim, because that happens. But we deal with it when it happens.
All right, Chief, we'll continue our discussion on that in just a moment.
Washington's most dependable source for news, traffic, and weather. 103.5 FM, WTOP Radio. Your direct line to Kathy Lanier. It's Ask the Chief on WTOP and WTOP.com. Now back to Mark Lewis.
To get on the line with Chief Lanier, call us now at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. For those of you on the line, hold tight. We'll be getting to you shortly. You can email questions as well at WTOP.com. A number of questions have come in from our website. You can also submit questions via Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheChief. Chief, let's continue with our discussion about sexual assault cases and what you are doing to try to demonstrate how your department handles them and to respond to this report from Human Rights Watch. You have noted that certainly that improvements were needed in the system. You've talked about improved training. You have added staff. What else have you done in this area? And has it been primarily in response to this report, or has it just been part of the process because sexual assault cases have increased in the district, right?
Well, reporting has definitely increased. And so, yes, in terms of what we were capturing. But so I think to put it in perspective, in the past 6 or 7 years, there's been a kind of a shift in the way law enforcement in general across the country handles sexual assault investigations because of increasing numbers of both drug-facilitated sexual assault and alcohol involvement in sexual assaults. So back in 2008, that's really where the reform process began for us. There was a pretty disturbing case in 2006, a DC case, and it resulted in a civil lawsuit. And following that civil lawsuit, several things were changed. The DC City Council passed new laws in 2009 that changed the way sexual assaults were handled. Our SANE program, which is the nursing program where sexual assault nurses are consolidated. They were moved and consolidated at Washington Hospital Center. We created a SART team, a sexual assault response team with advocates, counselors, and nurses. So that reform began in 2008, the end of 2008. The new law in 2009, the SART team and the move of the SANE nurses. So you'll see, you know, continued changes over those 3 years. And then nationwide, International Associations of Chiefs of Police and the Major City Chiefs have convened several conferences to kind of come up with model policies. So we changed our general order and our SOPs to match those model policies back in early 2011. So what you'll see is over the past 6 years is continual changes in the law, in the way the SANE program is managed, in the way that police reporting is handled, and in the training that law enforcement gets. And this is happening in every police department across the country. So there's always room for improvement, Mark, always. And our understanding of how we interact with different types of victims is very, very important.
What kind of follow-up happens with victims? So if someone does feel that they weren't treated fairly, the process was insensitive to them, what recourse do they have? What should they do?
That's a great question. Well, in the time period covered by HRW's report, 2008 to 2011, we actually went back. That's the first question I asked. How many complaints have we seen come in about this that were reported to us or reported to the Office of Police Complaints, which is an outside entity that will investigate police misconduct? And during that four-year period, we were able to find 12 complaints, three that came into us at MPD and nine that came into the Office of Police Complaints. We had one uniformed patrol officer that was disciplined as a result of one of the complaints, and really it was a mishandling of an initial response to a call. But other than that, we found no other actions taken for misconduct of police. But again, I think the most important thing to remember here, and the thing that I'm most concerned about, is if any victim feels they weren't treated properly or their case wasn't fully investigated or handled properly, I created a website now, Voices Heard, where people can write in and ask for our help. We've gotten one that came in yesterday, and actually it is a victim who's asking for our help in a case that is actually another jurisdiction. It's in Howard County. So we're trying to make sure that people let us know if they feel like something wasn't handled properly or they weren't treated sensitively.
How cooperative do you feel you've been in helping Human Rights Watch collect the data that they used in this? Because we've heard a lot of this back and forth, mm-hmm. and it seems like it's you against them, their word against yours. And I think, you know, people can walk away with the impression that the department hasn't been cooperating, that there are problems that may or may not be addressed by the department. And obviously, this has touched a nerve with you, at least with how we've seen you respond thus far. Was it something that you felt that you were a part of the process, or do you feel that they've taken data and they don't know how to interpret it and you've been out of the loop?
Well, I think it's a little bit of all of what you mentioned. One is you know, they're working with thousands and thousands and thousands of FOIA documents that are redacted, and working with redacted documents makes it difficult to draw conclusions. In terms of cooperation, when I got the first letter from Human Rights Watch in June, I invited them down and said, look, because you're working with redacted documents, if you sign a non-disclosure agreement, I will let you sit and look through our database, which I have never done for any organization before. But I knew that they were starting to draw some conclusions at that point based on missing information. So I tried to open up access to everything that we have to try and make sure they would draw the right conclusions. And unfortunately, on January 28th, after the report had been released, we finally got the list that they were working on of that 170, and were able to determine how to go back now and find why that's an inaccurate number, like the 18 of the cases that were reported by other jurisdictions. So it's a little bit of both, Mark.
Do you feel confident going before DC Council to talk about this, that you'll stand on your record?
Yes, and I'm also confident that our partners here in Washington, D.C., in the SANE program and the SART team are going to support that. We have a very strong and capable team now.
We're talking with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. Ask the Chief.
WTOB's Mark Lewis.
And we're going to the phone lines now, 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. If you have a question for Chief Lanier this morning, we'll start in the district. Ray is calling in. Chief, you'll need your headphones. Ray, go ahead. You're on with the Chief.
First of all, good morning to you, the host, as well as good morning to Chief.
Good morning.
I understand that you have your hands full from what I've just heard in your last report. Sounds like you need someone like myself in the Marine Corps to come in and kind of help you clean up the residuals.
I love that, Ray.
Yes, ma'am. First of all and foremost, I appreciate serving my country. I've just moved into the northeast area of D.C., where I've been confronted with out-of-control drug issues, with drug dealings on the streets down from Eastern High School. Also, there are pit bull owners who walk in the streets with their dogs unmasked. I have kids. I'm very afraid that I have to go into Plan B, which I don't necessarily need to. That's why that law enforcement is there to protect and preserve. But
Ray, have you spoken with anybody in the police district or the police department about the issues with the drug dealing at all?
18th and D, 17th and D, 19th and D area. You have a camera on a light pole here. Does it work or not? I have no idea. I've talked to some of your infield officers, and it's just a shrug of the shoulder, and that's the way life is in D.C. I don't buy that. I serve my country. I come over here to have a decent place to live in an up-and-coming neighborhood that's supposed to be in transition, and I have to deal with pit bulls. I have to deal with the locals who are residents here and have had their say of how they want to run their neighborhood. Drug deals going on in front of my door, it's just out of control. And I know that you have your hands full as a law enforcement officer, but if you need other resources, trust me, there are qualified Marines waiting and willing and ready to get the call.
Chief, you need some extra help?
First of all, thank you for serving our country, Ray, and I want to commend you for your service. It's important to all of us. I know the neighborhood very, very well. In fact, I live in Northeast, not right in that neighborhood, but I do live in Northeast myself. If you're willing to stay on the line, I have an assistant here. I'd like to get some follow-up contact information with you, but I know we've made a lot of arrests over there, marijuana arrests in particular. In fact, we've done some search warrants and some other things. But if you stay on the line, I'd like to have one of my team members that work in that area work with you to see if we can't make it better. Now, the pit bull issue, I tell you, I heard you say unmask. They are required to be on a leash, but they do not have to have a mask on. So,
Chief, a number of calls and emails have come in with questions about the D.C. crime map down for 6+ months. What is the status of this, and when might it be online so people can keep track of things?
Actually, I got lucky the other night. I ran into the guy who created that for us. He's just a resident that lives in the city who actually put that application together for us when it was first created. And he offered to help us now with, we have this new records management system, so the interface is going to be different. And he has offered to come in and help us get it back up. So now that we have the new records management system, we are publishing the stats. So the stats are on our website. But now just getting it linked back to that crime mapping application, I'm hoping within 30 days we'll be able to have that back up.
30 days?
Yes.
For the crime map?
Yes.
All right, back to the phones. Joyce has been holding on. Joyce, you're on with the chief. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chief Lanier. It is so good to hear your voice, and also good morning to the host.
Good morning.
Good morning, Joyce.
Thank you so much. You're doing a wonderful job. Keep on doing it. Now, my issue is, I know you're familiar with the Golden Rule Plaza apartments on New Jersey Avenue, senior building. You visited us there before. At any rate, there's a new library also on that corner at L Street, Northeast and New Jersey Avenue.
Yes, ma'am.
And it comes down First Street. Now, even though I'm a senior, I live in the building, I still work. Now, I come down First Street afternoon coming from work. I make that right turn on L Street, and you know our parking lot is right beside the building. It has become a hazardous venture trying to cross over New Jersey Avenue and get into the parking lot. Meanwhile, there's an officer that sits right on the corner of First Street and L Street practically every afternoon. I've stopped and asked them if they mind sitting down there on the end, especially in rush hour traffic, because what happens, the people come out of the 3rd Street Tunnel and barrel their way up to New York Avenue, you know, breaking the speed limit and everything. And you can't cross the intersection to get into the parking lot without taking your life into your hands. You wonder if you're going to get slammed into. I kind of creep out there, hold my hand, and point to the fact that I'm going straight across and beg somebody to leave a little break so I can get across. What can we do about that, Chief Lanier?
Well, first of all, the ones barreling through the 3rd Street Tunnel are probably going to get something in the mail with their picture on it.
I wouldn't be surprised.
If they're speeding through the tunnel, because we have speed enforcement through there. And in terms of pedestrian traffic, that's one of the reasons why we've pushed so hard for the speed enforcement with the automated cameras, because pedestrians don't stand a chance against a speeding car. But I'll talk with the district commander in the area and see if I can't get him to get down there and do a little bit of enhanced enforcement for you.
Christine is holding on from Silver Spring. Christine, go ahead. You're on with the chief.
Hello.
Hi, Christine.
Hello. Yes, I'm sorry. This question is about 911 calls. There were two things that were happening last summer. 911 was breaking down due to technical difficulties. And the second is, my question is somebody from the police force responsible for monitoring 911 to make sure that, first of all, the calls are getting through and being answered, and second, are they being handled properly? Are responsible people going to the site, and are the operators directing them?
Chief, are you aware of any challenges with 911?
No, I'm not aware of the 911, any problems with 911 system going down. Not in the district. I know in some surrounding jurisdictions they have. And for Kristen, I think it's Kristen. Kristen, the 911 call center is actually a different agency. It's not part of the police department. It is an independent agency. But to answer your question, yes. Everything that happens there, I know their call answer rate is in the seconds, you know, a few seconds to answer, or, you know, like 97% of all calls get answered in less than 5 seconds. And any call that you make to 911, everything can be tracked. So if you call and you ask for the police and you feel like it takes too long for the officers to arrive, you can contact either us or the Office of Unified Communications, and we can track back and say, hey, when your call came in, it came in at this time, it was dispatched to an officer at this time, and the officer arrived at this time, and we can kind of do a look back and see what happened. So I would encourage you to do that if you have any issues with response to any first responder from a 911 call.
Phone lines are open at 877-336-1035. 1-877-336-1035 is the number to call to speak with Chief Lanier, 877-336-1035. You can email questions at WTOP.com. You can also send us a tweet. Use the hashtag AskTheChief. Chief, good times in the district these days with a budget surplus, and everyone has ideas on how that money should be spent or put in the rainy day fund. I'm sure you do. Is this an opportunity now for you to get the extra officers you wanted?
It looks like we're going to get the officers, yes, and I'm extremely happy about that.
How many and when?
It's 100 extra authorized for sworn uniform officers. We're already starting, we're in the hiring process anyway, so we're already starting to pick up the number of people we're hiring. So we'll be putting about 30 officers a month in the academy.
That's very good. Well, it's coming at a
well,
good
attrition,
time.
This is a time when retirements are starting to peak. You know, for 3 years, we've been talking about this retirement bubble. The 89, 90 folks are all coming to retirement age now. And so keeping up with attrition will be a challenge. But I think right now we'll make it.
Always a touchy subject, but we have to ask while we're talking about hiring, are we any closer to a contract with officers?
Oh, I was so hopeful that we were going to have a contract by now. Right now we are at impasse, so I'm hoping that we can resolve that quickly. I just so want to get this contract secured and, move forward.
Is this headed to arbitration, or what's going to happen there?
The way I understand that it'll work now is we'll have a mediation to try and get through the, it's a limited number of issues left now that we need to mediate through. So mediation's the next step, and I think everybody's goal here is to get a contract.
Is there any other major city that has gone 4+ years?
Oh, yeah.
Without their officers having a new contract?
There's not only a lot of major cities that have gone more than 4 years without a pay raise. There's a lot of major cities that have laid off 50% of their police department.
But I mean, gone without a contract this long.
I don't monitor that too much, but I do see, and when I talk with my colleagues and major city chiefs, many, many, many agencies have gone without pay raises and have gone with, cuts in pay and layoffs. And, we've been very, very lucky in that vein. This region has not been hit as hard financially as others.
Now, with all of the concerns that you have to deal with, at least the statistics that we're seeing shows that the officers not only are doing a good job, but they're doing a great job. Homicide rate at a 50-year low.
See,
in the district.
I love you already, Mark. Yes, they are doing a great job. Thank you for saying that. They're doing a fantastic job. And, we always talk about crime stats, but yes, crime is down. And the important crimes, violent crime, is down. We're seeing about a 6% reduction so far this year. But there's so much more to that than what these officers do out there. They're amazing. We had an officer the other day pull up in a parking lot and start handing out pizza to kids because they, did great things in school. And there's just so many other great things going on.
Well, what do you attribute the decline in violent crime to in the district? I know there's so many things you're doing, community policing, all of the things that you're doing appear to be paying off. But if you had to put your finger on one or two things that you think is really making a difference, what would that be?
From a policing standpoint, I think the two things that have made the biggest difference, so actually there's three. Focusing on illegal guns. We have a gun unit that is second to none, and the message has gotten out because we saw almost 3 straight years of consecutive drops in illegal firearms being used in crimes once that unit started. The gang unit, my gang intelligence unit are just fantastic. They're just amazing. You don't see the gang retaliatory shootings like you used to in the district. Just 3 years ago, think back to Trinidad.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't see that back and forth shootings anymore. And that's because the gang intelligence unit is fantastic. And then lastly, I think the community providing us information cannot be understated. They give us information now before problems rise up to the level of shootings. And when things happen, they give us information to take people off the street. So, from my opinion, those are the three things that have helped us the most.
What do you think is working here with controlling illegal guns that may not be working so well in other cities? Chicago, for example, going through a horrible situation with homicides, they have some of the strictest gun laws in the country, yet more than 500 murders last year. What's happening?
Yeah, there's some challenges in other cities. And, I believe from talking to my colleagues, one of the biggest challenges they're facing out there and in some other cities is a gang issue. Again, I mean, when gangs are present with illegal firearms, you see just such a significant number of retaliatory shootings. And that can just really take a huge toll. I mean, the law the laws are important. I think tight gun controls, particularly in major urban areas, are important. They've got a much bigger population to police there than I do. But for us, focusing on those illegal firearms has made a tremendous difference.
Where do you stand as you watch the debates occur now and intensify following the Newtown, Connecticut massacre about where we need to be and what measures we need to put in place, what additional armed officers we need to have in schools? What's your view on what will keep gun violence from escalating more than it is already?
Well, nobody has a crystal ball, and I appreciate the president's efforts, and I feel for him at the same time. There's no, magic solution, but I do think, as a government, there is a responsibility to do everything we can to have policies that we think will at least minimize or reduce opportunity for these types of mass shootings to have the devastating impact they have. So, I think the large capacity magazine issue is a good one.
You agree with limiting that?
I mean, just think about it. In most states across the United States, even hunters are limited to the number of rounds they can carry in their weapon when they're hunting for a reason. Just off the top of my head, it's usually 3 to 5 rounds that you can have in your weapon when you're hunting. And so asking for magazines with 10, in weapons that are, essentially not designed for hunting, but designed for target practice or essentially can be used to shoot people, asking for no more than 10 rounds is not unreasonable to me.
You would support an assault weapons ban?
I would. I would, absolutely.
Do you think it worked before?
Well, I think two things you have to think about. One is we have an obligation as a government to try and have policies that minimize opportunity. To say, let's not regulate them, to me doesn't make sense. We've seen too many devastating consequences from not trying to regulate them. I think the background checks also are important. So I think there's a lot of things that the government has to consider. But, yeah, I do think it does make an impact. I can't say how much because you can't measure what you prevent.
Final minutes with Ask the Chief coming up with Chief Lanier on
Lewis.
Final minutes this month on WTOP with Chief Lanier and your chance to ask some questions. We'll get back to the phones in just a minute. 877-336-1035. 877-336-1035. You can tweet your question. Use the hashtag AskThe. And you can also join the conversation on WTOP's Facebook page. Chief, a couple of emails that have come in with questions, and I've seen this several times in recent days. Folks are concerned about getting into trouble with the law if they want to buy a ticket from someone else to a sporting event or a concert. The question reads, I want to go see the Caps. I can't seem to find a reasonably priced ticket without fees. I'd rather not send someone I've never met money over Craigslist. Is it legal to
purchase? Please don't do that.
Is it legal to purchase tickets off a scalper outside the stadium? Is there legal recourse for me for buying tickets from a scalper? Will an officer confront me?
All right, so I want to clear up. I did an interview a couple of days ago, and I think some of the information that went out was not accurate. And so it is not illegal to purchase from a scalper, but I would warn you that a lot of times when you purchase from a scalper, you could be getting ripped off. And we've had cases, a lot of cases, where the tickets that were purchased from a scalper were a counterfeit, and you couldn't get into the event. So I would warn you strongly against purchasing from a scalper. It is illegal to scalp, and we've been really, since the Caps are back, and the big popular events is where the scalpers go. So we've got officers down there now. We've been doing some pretty heavy enforcement in the last couple of weeks. So just, buyer beware in terms of where you buy.
So who gets into trouble? The seller?
The seller. It's illegal to sell in public space.
If it's below the face value?
Makes no difference. The law simply says that it is illegal to sell in public space.
Want to ask you about another issue we've seen a lot in the news, and it continues to happen. It's not just here. Many other major cities are dealing with it. The thefts of cell phones, smartphones. It happens quite a bit on Metro. It's happening on city streets. And in some cases, it's more than just a snatch and grab. There are weapons involved. Advice to folks, obviously try to keep the cell phones out of sight, but people use them. They have their headphones on. They're visible.
So I'm going to announce my new crusade right here on your program, Mark.
All right.
Your first show. What part of our issue right now is there are these new eco boxes that have been put up, and there's three of them in the immediate area around Washington, D.C., where a person can deposit in a machine similar to an ATM a cell phone and get instant cash. Many of those phones are stolen. This is a problem for me. I'm working with the company. They have been very gracious, in fact, overly gracious in providing, you know, working with us and providing us with information so that we can work with them. But I just think this is not a good system here to have.
Do you think that's increasing the problem?
I'm sure it is.
What about this database that you were anxiously awaiting for to come online some months ago, where they track stolen phones, the wireless companies are involved so that you can't steal someone's phone and then take it to another carrier?
Yeah, that's
carrier.
Fantastic. That has helped us.
Is that working?
Yes, and it is working. And that's why I think that this new... these eco boxes, they're not taking those phones so that they can resell them, because if they are stolen, they won't be able to resell them, but they're recycling. And so the database is not going to help me. So now I have to try and go after another angle here. So, but I am encouraged that this group that are running these sites have been very cooperative with us.
Back to the phones. Adam has been holding from Chantilly. Adam, go ahead. You're on with the chief.
Good morning, chief. Good morning, host. Thank you very much for your service, Chief. You're remarkable. You are an inspiration. You and your voices out there are wonderful. Thank you. Quick question about less lethal, and specifically like a taser. Are your troops permitted to carry those? And me as a dog walking regular Joe, am I permitted to carry like a stun gun type device in the district?
Thank you, Adam, for calling and asking before you go out and purchase a stun gun.
You can't have a stun gun.
Have a stun gun. No, you can have mace. OC spray is permissible. You're allowed to use that. And actually, our officers, including myself, are required to carry less lethal. We carry either OC spray, an ASP, which is an expandable baton, but less lethals are required in my police department for all members, and that includes all the way up to me. I carry it as well. But I would recommend, if you're looking for some self-defense, less lethal, it would be an OC.
Do you find, given the current environment, not only just what we just talked about, thefts of cell phones and other personal property, but in light of everything that's been happening, Newtown and others, are more people looking for weapons and other things to protect themselves, or more people signing up for guns?
I mean, we haven't seen an uptick in firearms registrations in the district. I mean, it's been steady for years, just a regular steady, kind of registration, but not a large number. But I haven't seen an uptick here. I have been just monitoring, globally, watching what's happening with the gun shows and debate on controls. I think the gun shows are seeing a big increase in purchases of firearms.
We have just 45 seconds left. Before I let you go, I have to get your assessment of the inauguration. What's the after-action report? By all indications, everything went well.
By all indications, everything went very, very well. There was the biggest problem we had was lots and lots of crowds on the south side of the mall, and people who didn't come early waited a little bit, I think, to get into those gold ticket areas. But overall, I think everybody agrees it went very, very well. There was huge crowds, and it went smoothly, and the weather was good.
Yes, indeed. Now, for the next time in 4 years, will we have a plan so that council members don't have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to get in place?
We took good care of our council members. I think we've got a plan for them.
You'd think after all these years that wouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, well, it's not. It wasn't really about getting the council members in. It's about whether they'd be able to get cars in and park them where they wanted to park
right.
them.
And as early as they needed to be. All right, Chief, we appreciate you coming in as always. Chief Kathy Lanier with Ask the Chief on WTOP.
103.5 WTOP Radio.